Welcome to Majak Innovatsii, the podcast of Unit City dedicated to innovation. From Ukraine to the world.
Privit, I am Dominique Piotet. I'm French and American, and after many, many years in San Francisco, I decided to move to Kyiv. I'm the CEO of Unit City and of Sector X. Today I want to talk about, maybe the future of fashion, how to scan your body, why Ukraine is cool, the future of e-commerce, why your phone is dead, and soon you're not going to have a screen, but maybe you're going to wear glasses. And of course, how to make the best uniforms, because it's a very important topic. Okay, so today we are with the founder and the CEO of 3D Look, and Vadim Rogovsky. Vadim, hello.
Majak Innovatsii. 1, 2, 3, launch.
And today we're talking about actually another of my passion, fashion.
Fashion is your passion.
Yeah, fashion is one of my passion. I have many passion. I'm a man of many passion. But fashion plus AI plus solving big problems for retailers plus solving big problems for me.
Startup from Ukraine.
Plus startup from Ukraine. Oh my God, all of my passions together plus investment. Very important. And today we're super happy because we have a very important, startup from Ukraine, starting to be very well known, won many awards, including a really cool award from LVMH in 2019. It's 3D Look. Have you heard about 3D Look, Tatiana?
Sure.
Of course, right? In Ukraine, people know about 3D Look. In the world, people are starting to know. And we have with us Vadim Rogovsky, who is the CEO and co-founder of 3D Look. Vadim, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Oh, we're super happy. Okay, first, let's start about the idea. How did you come with that idea of 3D Look? What does it do? What problems are you trying to solve?
So before starting 3D Look, I was involved in ad tech, so in online mobile advertising. And I had a lot of experience with mobile apps, with mobile devices, etc. But I started to feel that I want to... I started to get excited about the camera, about the smartphone camera, because mm-hmm. it started to be massively adopted. And I started to see this first wave of augmented reality applications for fun, these face filters, these makeup solutions. And it was like the beginning of 2016 when my co-founder Alex and I, we decided that we would like to ride on this wave of different new use cases and some type of camera, but to create something not just for fun, but much more, much more comprehensive, mm-hmm. and much more practical, not just for fun. And we decided to create like a digital passport, how we called it, which is like a solution that enables everyone who has a smartphone with a regular camera to be able to scan their bodies with just two photos. Or later, just to connect your Instagram or a camera mm-hmm. roll, and that's it. We'll do the rest. And to use this data subsequently in any, to buy any services or goods that require personalization based on consumers' bodies. So think about not only apparel, think about personalized furniture. Think about customized mattresses. We have a big client that manufactures customized mattresses for every consumer's body. Yeah, they can create a mattress for you. It's a very large company. Or think about using your body data in a fitness app to track your progress, or even using your 3D avatar in a game. But obviously, we had to focus. So we started from after customer development. We understood that we have to go after fashion retail.
It's a big problem in fashion retail, especially in e-commerce. It has been for many years. I mean, I've been working with big both big retailer e-commerce players and fashion brands, and it's been a problem that they've been looking at for 15 years, I would say, without finding a solution, a real good, reliable solution. So I saw crazy stuff, honestly. I mean, I went to labs and I saw 3D scanners, like big porticos, like you would go under it and they would take picture from all around. Mm-hmm. So, like crazy stuff, honestly, that were very impractical and not realistic. So why now? And why your solution more than any other? Do you think the market is ready now and technology is ready now?
Of course, yeah. We are confident that that's the right time because, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. The first attempt to solve this problem of wrong fit finding the right size for a consumer started in late 90s when people started to put these bulky 3D scanners into shopping malls. Then when web cameras started to be adopted, people started to create these solutions for web cameras. But it failed, and people burned hundreds of millions of dollars because it was just too complex. Average consumer was not ready to put so much effort into getting scanned, and it's also a problem to get scanned in a shopping mall because it's quite a private experience.
Yes.
So we felt that by the beginning of 2016, several important things happened. First of all, consumers around the world started to be used to taking photos all the time to get any, just for fun or to get some personalized experiences. Secondly, technologies started, so neural networks started to evolve, some scientific papers started to appear, and servers started to be more powerful. That's why we could use them to train our neural networks faster. And lastly, retailers and fashion brands, they understood that fast fashion doesn't work anymore. And they started to understand that they need to invest in innovations and, first of all, in personalization.
Mm-hmm. I remember. So for you, the pivot is 2016. It's when things changed, right?
And when I decided to go to completely new industry. Yeah.
I remember going to New York a lot. I had an office in New York and visiting a lot the store of Diane von Furstenberg, and she had a really cool magic mirror. They call that magic mirror. So you would go in front of the mirror and it would kind of do things for you and tell you what to wear. Do you believe in that type of technology in stores?
Well, we've been approached by numerous magic mirror companies. The problem with them is that they don't contain camera because of some privacy issues, because it's not allowed to put the camera in the store. And without the camera, it's not a personalized experience because the mirror doesn't know anything about you and you still need to type or to give voice commands. So as of today, I don't feel that it's going to be massive. It's going to be replaced by some next solution, and I think it's not going to be mirror. Probably it's going to be AR glasses or something like that. But mirror is something that's just intermediate.
Oh, the glasses. Yeah. You know, I was one of the first one to have the Google Glass. Mm. I still have picture. I still remember I was wearing them one day in San Francisco. I think I stopped wearing them like many people after. And I enter an elevator and someone told me, no. No, not with those glass. You cannot be in the elevator. Huh. I had to get out of the elevator. And I understand. I mean, they were freaky. This can be freaky technology, right?
Yeah, I mean, but now like Snap recently releases spectacles, etc. I mean, many futurists believe that in 10 years we are going to wear glasses instead of looking at our smartphone screens.
I totally agree. I think actually screens are annoying. And it's going to be interesting. Oh, I can't wait to see those 10 years. Or maybe I can wait. I don't know.
Do you develop your technology further? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you match it with some medical researchers? Maybe some fashion consulting integrated into your idea?
Yeah, we have. We started just to hire best people we could find in Ukraine, in Ukraine, actually, in computer vision and machine learning. But then it was complex since the very beginning because we needed to experiment. We didn't have any playbook. We didn't, because no one else has achieved any meaningful success there. Mm-hmm. Then it started to be more complicated because we started to add more areas of expertise, it was a big area like size and fit algorithms. Totally different. It's totally different. We were like, I'm a software guy. My two co-founders are very technical, but I was lucky. I met my another co-founders. Our founding team is four people. So I met Whitney in San Francisco, and Whitney, she had a long career in on executive positions, mostly in the fashion industry, in the US, and she brought this domain expertise in fashion. So, but also it was just the beginning. We understood that this combining size and fit algorithms, like combining garment expertise with machine learning computer vision, is totally like it's even way more complex. And mm-hmm. also we established our own 3D scanning lab in Odessa, where we invite people to get scanned, manually measured, photographed, etc. And we invite people of different body shapes, age, and gender groups to collect unique data sets.
I love it. Let's talk about a few other things. One of them being very important for us is Ukraine mm-hmm. and tech in Ukraine. So you are a global company. I mean, one of your co-founder is in and from San Francisco. I suspect that your client are global client. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got the LVMH Innovation Award. I'm not even sure people know your Ukrainian company. How important it is for you to be Ukrainian, or what do you find in Ukraine that really helps you create this company? You just mentioned Odessa. I know your other co-founders are Ukrainian. But let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah. We have really a global founding team, because Whitney is in San Francisco, Ivan is in London, and Alex is in Odessa, and I'm actually like
all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of Ukrainian tech ecosystem. I was launching one of the first startup accelerators in Ukraine back in 2012 called Wannabes. And we've been doing some pre-seed and seed investments with my partners. Mm-hmm. So I'm really like was in the beginning of this popularization of startup ecosystem in Ukraine. And it's important for us, first of all, because of obvious reason of access to tech talent, obviously. Also, I would say still, it's, and why I'm speaking at different conferences, etc., to basically to lead by example, to show stories, because people, there are not enough success stories in Ukraine, because some people just are there's like a some kind of like a culture, like a mindset that it's better not to share anything publicly, and unfortunately, but someone has to do it, so it's very important for people who are just, I don't know, like developers in some outsourcing company, right, just to see what can be possible, mm-hmm. and it's very important for me to show our successes in Ukraine, to make sure that more people will quit their will quit outsourcing business, will quit their jobs there, and will try to create something meaningful out of Ukraine.
Okay. What are the biggest challenge today to do that? Like to create more products company? I mean, of course, I agree with you. This is why we're building Unit City, right? That's mm-hmm. It's to create a platform for a product company to emerge and we want to bridge them with the rest of the world. This is why I moved from San Francisco. So I think we share the same, we're on the same mission. But what are the main challenges according to you here in Ukraine?
In terms of
creating a product company, a startup.
Well, first of all, cost of talent is has grown significantly since we started. In 5 years, I see the average salaries of developers in machine learning, computer vision, et cetera. Are even, like they are, I don't know, sometimes even twice bigger. Mm-hmm. So it's they're more expensive, but maybe not even the problem is not even it's not the main problem. The main problem is that probably yes, that it's one of side of the problem. But the salaries are getting bigger, so people are feeling more and more comfortable working in their outsourcing, outstaffing companies, and that's why they feel less motivation, less, they have less interest in quitting and creating their own ventures. And also, yeah, the mindset, it's in Ukraine, unfortunately, it's not so cool to steal. There is no like a startup
culture,
entrepreneurial. I would say like startup culture, it's sometimes biased terminology, but entrepreneurial culture, it's not like in Israel or even in Lithuania or even in Spain and Portugal. Now I see the rise of these cultures. Of course, Silicon Valley, I mean, it's clear. Yeah. But here, it's moving there very slowly. And also, yeah, the problem is that still Ukraine in agriculture or in IT is still a resource country that is, we supply resources, we supply IT resources to the biggest companies in the world while not creating any added value here.
For me, I also feel like access to capital is a challenge. I mean, to venture capital, not to money in general, but to venture mm-hmm. capital. Actually, when you raise for 3DLOOK, you raise from international investment firm, not from really Ukrainian VC funds, which are basically non-existent anyway. So it would have been, right? But how do we fix this?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, in the beginning, yeah, in the beginning, during the first year of 3DLOOK, I've been funding the company to get to the at least to the stage when we understood that yes, we can, it's feasible to create this technology, so but we need more capital. And then I basically raised some money from just angels from my network. I just were telling them that we do some cool stuff, and they were interested, but they were investing not in 3DLOOK probably at this stage. They were investing in something that I do. In terms of Ukrainian funds, we raised just from two. It's actually ICU Ventures. It's maybe the most active now, the only one that is relatively yeah. active. And from U Ventures, which is a part of Horizon.
Yeah, yes.
So these are the two.
But basically, they are the only two who are doing business in Ukraine, right?
And I like these people, but yeah, they are the only two. They have also like limited capacity.
Yeah.
So I would say that it's very important to be a part of some ecosystems abroad. For me, what helped me that it was not my first company, so I already had some. I've been traveling to, spending meaningful time in the U.S. since 2012. So I had some connections there. So it was quite much easier for me to tap into my network, to get introduced to investors, etc. And they already saw my previous experience.
Yeah, your track record.
It was easy for them to do background checks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So definitely, I think that in Ukraine, the chances are, it's not like in Silicon Valley when sometimes 20 years old founders can quit Stanford, et cetera, and do something because they are inside this massive. Here, it's not the case. Here, I believe in the success of more mature, more experienced founders running at least their second or third company and definitely spending a lot of time outside of Ukraine in one of the biggest startup ecosystems in the world, but leveraging Ukrainian technical and product talents.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about fashion in Ukraine, because fashion is also growing in Ukraine. And so do you have any Ukrainian e-commerce company you're working with, or fashion designer you're working with, or it's not mature enough yet?
Yeah, our core market since day one was the US, because innovation, because just is a, I mean, if innovations are adopted in the US, then they are adopted everywhere. So that's why we decided to start from that ecosystem, mm-hmm. and also because of access to capital, et cetera, et cetera. But in Ukraine, I see a lot of independent, like a lot of small fashion brands, a lot of independent designers. And my wife is running her small fashion brand as well.
What's the name of her brand? Oh, let's advertise.
Moralized. It's comfortable clothing for women for home.
Okay, so, cool. I love it.
And I see a lot of a lot of effort here. A lot of young designers. A lot of marketplaces for young designers. But there is a huge difference between a lot of small designers and some really big entities. Not just still, we have just two fashion e-commerce companies in Ukraine that are visible at least. It's like Modna Kasta and Le Boutique. And actually, we spoke to both early in after we started, and they in Ukraine, these companies are not ready to. They don't even have this problem because they have so many more, I would say, more simple, more underlying problems to fix that they don't even care about personalization. At least it happened like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Then we just even stopped to waste time on this. But hopefully at some point of time, we can have some clients in Ukraine. Yeah.
It's very interesting for me to see a startup that is definitely based in Ukraine, but that is that seemed global from day one and wherever the market is, you guys are. Like, it's very pragmatic in many ways, and I like it. Tatiana?
And I would like to continue with fashion as well. So this COVID years already changed how we, what we wear, so what clothes do we prefer to buy. And I read some there that, like, amount of home pants were
sweatpants.
Sweatpants, yes, increased enormously in this.
Oh yeah,
years.
I bought quite a few of them. Trust me.
Yeah, and even your wife is producing clothes for home, so for remote working, for more convenient way to be at home when you don't need to be fashionable. So, what are the trends in retail, in the way we consume in retail, and so how do you see it in perspective?
I can say that we have a lot of we see a lot of delayed demand. For example, one of our clients is the biggest, like the group of biggest menswear retailers in the U.S. The company is called Taylor Brands. They have several brands, and they have hundreds of stores with actually. With suits, with tuxedos, with like formal wear, and we saw a clear, and all their sales reps are using a white label app with our solution inside. So when people come in, instead of going to a dressing room, the sales rep that just takes two photos of the person and then shows all the measurements, recommended sizes on the iPad. Very
so cool,
very fast, very
super simple. Cool.
And we were seeing all these trends when there were like lockdowns. When lockdowns were introduced, and we saw sharp declines in terms of number of customers who got scanned. But then we saw so fast rebound, and definitely we see that. People just because if you go to buy this, you go to some event, you prepare for some event, for a wedding, for some kind of party. So people just just started to actively go to these stores, buy a lot of stuff. So we see a lot of delayed demand. I think we will go back to the normal way of consuming fashion, but of course some brands who position themselves well. I mean, just pandemic accelerated the success of one company of one part of companies and also accelerated the demise of another. So companies like Lululemon, who really I'm following their stock. They are basically it's like the best yoga pants.
Lululemon is super cool. Yeah,
they position themselves well. They also bought tech company Mirror. They started. They position themselves well for this work from home And also, obviously, Walmart, etc., with this, also cheap apparel, their apparel business was growing. But obviously, luxury fashion had a big hit.
Yeah.
And but still, and also because of Chinese, mostly. But now I think it's looking at Farfetch, looking at how fast they started to rebound. I think that it's got all the even luxury is going back to normal, and also of course the share of sales of in luxury fashion is going to be way bigger of online sales in luxury, way bigger than it was before the pandemic, because people started to be they started to understand that they can buy even luxury online.
Actually, this
is it possible that one day so new normal will be like I'm renting tuxedo, but I'm owning sweatpants.
Oh, another big trend is re-commerce. See, look at this recent IPOs of ThredUp, for example, and Rent the Runway is also preparing for that.
Yeah.
So people are really, especially like younger generation, the Generation Z, et cetera, they are more likely to rent an expensive or even buy a used expensive piece of clothing, then buy 10 cheap ones from H&M and then throw them away. Yeah, and it's also a great trend for environment, I think.
I'm a huge fan of a company called Poshmark. I know. If you know them. So I've been following the Poshmark thing. I mean, that's one of the things I will always regret in my life. I didn't invest in them when they started because I know the founders extremely well. And when I saw them growing, and I remember at the beginning, I would introduce them to luxury brands, and luxury brands, no. Mm-hmm. But then did something very smart. They built communities. And I think communities of buyers, of people who would and working on that idea, okay, I love Hermes, but I cannot afford a Kelly, or at least I cannot afford a new one. It's something that exists that needs to be recognized, and it's much better than fake. You just buy a used one. So that's absolutely cool. Let's talk about the future of e-commerce, actually, because you're an enabler in many ways of e-commerce. Where is it going? Because of course we see the numbers; it's growing, but it was not. I mean, to me, I was always surprised that it's not growing that fast. Like it takes time to build this e-commerce. I think Amazon is, of course, the leader in the U.S., but I think it's just a few percent of the global commerce in the U.S. at the end. So where is it going?
Well, in the U.S., it's like one third of e-commerce. But if we look at
commerce.
Yeah, at commerce, of course, it's still because e-commerce is like 20% of the whole commerce.
Yeah, exactly.
And Amazon is like, so Amazon probably will be like 7%.
7%, So there's still a lot of room for growth.
I think the problem is Amazon is solving the problem to buy something very quickly, very easily. But Amazon is not solving the problem of discovery. And mm-hmm. I think why physical retail still is the major part of all commerce is because is much more. I mean, people are much more used to discover new items in stores, and that's why offline stores are transforming and will be transforming into experiential places rather mm-hmm. than just transactional places. And and that's why, for example, Pinterest is. I was reading articles about Pinterest. I was thinking about buying some of their stock. They are doing well in this economy because Pinterest is actually created for discovery,
yep.
And or Instagram, TikTok. I mean, they are or Snap. They all run into social commerce because they understand that now it's their era. It's their time because they can help people to discover stuff. And also, not only they're already helping to discover them, but now they want also to own that transaction, to own the purchase. Yeah,
you know, it's very interesting. It's a conversation I remember having with Vogue, actually in the U.S. Was a big client of mine, and discussing social commerce with actually Pinterest, and Vogue were like, oh, we will never try to sell the looks and the dresses we advertise in Vogue. And of course, now they are doing it. So to you, discovery will still be in many ways in the physical world as well. But social commerce is becoming big.
Yeah, I also see, it's very interesting, I see a reverse trend. So now, if, first of all, it was a trend that offline retailers were going online and investing heavily there. They still do. But then there is a trend that digital native e-commerce companies started to go offline. And also, it's a very interesting trend because they understand that the offline won't go anywhere. It will just transform from, it will just be one of the big stages in this consumer journey, but not always just the place to make a transaction. It's a place to find, to feel, to touch. But then transaction can be completed on Instagram, on a website, etc.
How do you make money?
So as a 3D Look.
Yes.
Yeah, we B2B company.
Okay.
I mean, we charge clients annual subscriptions. It's fixed amount of money depending on the size of the client, but we charge enterprises.
Okay.
For using, so we have two products basically. One of them is for fashion e-commerce, and we are going to launch out of the box a version of the first solution for fashion e-commerce that combines not only size recommendation, but virtual try-on. It's going to be hopefully a big success because we will try to solve the whole problem rather than just a part of the problem. And we also have the solution for uniform manufacturers that was very successful last year when we grew more than 5 times in revenue because we started to work with some of the largest uniform manufacturers for military, for firefighters, even the biggest manufacturer of body armor. And you can imagine the responsibility.
I never thought about that.
And you can imagine the responsibility if based on your solution, military people, mm-hmm. soldiers, they get their body armor. Yeah.
Ah. That's actually really cool.
It worked for us. It worked better than fashion last year during mm-hmm. pandemic. Now, fashion is going back, and now we started also to prioritize it.
What's next for you?
Well, as I said, we see some new clients from new verticals, such as the retailer of mattresses that I mentioned earlier. And
so other categories?
Yeah, other categories. First of all, we want to become like a de facto industry standard in fashion e-com, that when any executive is thinking about personalization, how to improve personalization, you should think about us. It's like to be top of mind for executives in fashion retail. Yeah, it's one. But then, to expand geographically, Chinese market is very interesting, obviously.
Let's talk about China a little bit. Because, I mean, yes, of course, it's very interesting. You're not in China yet.
Not at all. No, we had one launch. We launched with Dickies. Obviously, you know Dickies, right?
Yeah, of course.
We launched with Dickies on.
I actually really like Dickies.
On Taobao, yeah. And now, yes. And now we are going to expand it into the US, hopefully. So it was our first launch in China, and then we started to look more seriously.
But it's interesting because you're launching with a US brand.
Yes,
in China yeah. On Taobao.
They decided to test it in China.
We see a lot of there's a lot of it's a good place to test,
but totally different. I mean, totally different user experience
and totally different ecosystem. I mean, different channels, different customer journey. I remember that's another stupid story. But I remember my first time when I had an office in Shanghai and. First time in 2008 or 2009, people were still going to pay cash when they were buying keywords on Baidu.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So Baidu would have, so Baidu is a Chinese Google. Baidu would have physical offices and companies would go and pay cash to buy their keywords. It was insane. It was before Alipay and all that good stuff. And then from boom, one day, everything switched to the phone and to phone payment. It's really interesting how an ecosystem can switch quickly. I have two last questions. One of them is, what are the other cool Ukrainian companies, tech companies, startup companies that you look at and you're like, wow, they're cool. They're going to do something big or they're doing something big.
Well, definitely. I just had, before I went to you guys, I had a breakfast with Vitaly from Augmented Pixels. He was also from Odessa and we graduated from the same university. And they actually are working on a solution to map the world in 3D and also basically, yeah, definitely Reface, the company that I'm going to be on the panel now at the conference. Definitely like Reply. Yeah, yes. you know all these guys.
I mean, of course we do. Yeah, but we want to hear it from an entrepreneur.
Yeah, they first come to mind in terms of the companies that already are gaining some success. But there are also companies that have a potential to be there, like Competera, for example,
yes.
Another retail tech company, and I know them very well. Or Influ2, it's an ad platform with very, interesting approach. Yeah. These are like the first two that come
cool.
to mind. Yeah.
Well, they're cool ones, so we're very proud of
Did you speak to all of them already or not yet?
Not yet, uh-huh, but good. working on it, one at a time.
We keep telling success stories.
Yeah, we keep telling success stories, and we want them in Unit City, for our events, to share. It's what we do. Last question, and it's a tradition in this show, and it's going to take you by surprise, I think. We always ask people, what are they listening to right now? What type of music? What song? What are you listening to? And we're going to listen to it.
What song?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Really, I can. It's hard to distinguish just one, but
What singer? What band? What group?
I think I just choose some. On Apple Music, I choose some playlists according to the style. For example, they have one great playlist that is called like Wake Up, and there is some rock plus dance plus even like house, electro, etc. But I can say that, for example, what comes to mind is that, like, there is a group Panic at the Disco, and they have the song High Hopes, and it's like one of the favorite ones in this playlist.
Panic at the Disco. That's cool. Well, Vadim, thank you very much. It was great to have you on the show. And we wish you lots of success. You already have lots of success, but it's going to be big. I love it. So thank you.
Well, I enjoyed this interview.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
said, don't give up, it's a little complicated, all tied up, no more love, and I'd hate to see you waiting. They say it's all been done, but they haven't seen the best of me, so I got one more run, and it's gonna be a sight to see, had to have high hopes for a living, shooting for the stars when I couldn't make a killing, didn't have a dime, but I always had a vision, always had high hopes.